Wednesday, the 19th of August. It rained here overnight and the feeds came in the way rain does, slow and then all at once. I have four things for you this morning, and I will admit up front that three of them made me sit back in the chair rather than lean forward. Fill your cup. Let us get into them. First up, OpenAI published something yesterday that I do not think has an exact precedent, and it is worth reading slowly. The company said that preliminary evidence indicates an upcoming model, which they refer to as Astra, may meet the critical cybersecurity capability threshold defined in their own preparedness framework. That determination was made internally on the 7th of August, and rather than describing what they intend to do about it in the abstract, they described what they actually did. They paused reinforcement learning training on their latest models intended for deployment. 2 weeks. The largest planned frontier reinforcement learning run is still on hold, while smaller-scale training and evaluations proceed, with the stated purpose of assessing model behavior, validating safeguards, and establishing more evidence of alignment before continuing. They also paused frontier model inference inside their research clusters for any run capable of executing code or using tools with internet access, and then restored it workload by workload along a limited secured path. A significant number of Astra workloads are still paused, waiting to be migrated, with safety and alignment work prioritized to come back first. The security changes read like an infrastructure rebuild rather than a policy statement. Model-generated and untrusted code now runs in sandbox isolation. Network isolation is designed so that compromising a single workload does not by itself grant internet access or reach into other internal networks, shared services removed, standing privileges reduced, security logging improved, and continuous simulated attack testing driven by models themselves. But the part that will matter most in a year is the monitoring architecture, because they put a number on it. Activation classifiers inspect internal model activity at every sampled token. When something looks wrong, that escalates to higher compute automated investigators that examine tool actions, the reasoning available to them, and the full sequence of activity, specifically looking for unauthorized access, data theft, destructive behavior, and attempts to evade safeguards. The target alert latency is 30 minutes. Alerts at critical boundaries page the safety, security, and research teams, and if those teams cannot rule out a false positive within 30 minutes, they are required to pause the activity. Monitoring is mandatory for all tool-using reinforcement learning training and evaluation at their sole capability level or higher, and for all Astra inference with tools. The overhead is roughly 20% of monitored inference compute. 20%, that is the price of watching stated out loud as a recurring line item on frontier training rather than as a principle. A technical report on the earlier evaluation security incident and a dedicated post on the monitoring system are both still to come, and the preparedness framework itself is going to be revised. Moving on to our second story, which is the one piece of hardware news in today's four, and it pulls in exactly the opposite direction. Cerebras announced the CS4 this week, with fuller detail promised at Hotchips. The company's own claims are up to 30 times faster inference than production graphics processing unit systems, and up to 10 times more throughput per watt than the previous generation. Each system carries three wafer-scale engines, and wafer-to-wafer latency is down to 2 microseconds, which lets wafers be linked inside and across racks without a switch in between. On that basis, Cerebras claims more than 1,000 tokens per second on models exceeding 10 trillion parameters, while keeping decode interactive. SemiAnalysis published a breakdown the same week that reframes what is actually new here, and I found their read more useful than the press material. The CS4 uses the same 5-nanometer silicon as its predecessor. The doubling in performance comes from roughly doubling clock speed, which is possible because of dramatically improved power delivery and cooling, not because of a new process node. And the consequence of the higher clock that actually matters is that memory bandwidth doubles. Cerebras systems win on kernels with low arithmetic intensity, which is to say low batch decode, And for that workload, memory bandwidth is very nearly the whole story for tokens per second per user. Off-wafer input and output rises from 1.2 terabits per second to 2.4. The power engineering is what makes the clock increase possible, and it is genuinely clever. Cerebras describes what they call a wafer-scale backpack, a self-contained three-dimensional assembly that folds the wafer, power conversion, direct liquid cooling, high-speed input and output, and control electronics into a single module with 50% fewer components. Power delivery sits half a millimeter from the processor, against roughly 50 millimeters on a conventional accelerator board. About 100 times closer, that nearly eliminates board-level loss and allows roughly twice the power into the wafer. What does not move is memory capacity. Static memory per wafer stays at 44 gigabytes, fixed by the number of cells on the die. So a new capacity point requires new silicon. Semi-analysis reads the new field-upgradable input-output module as the answer to that, because it converts the proprietary interconnect to standard Ethernet, which opens the door to disaggregated setups pairing wafer-scale compute with high-bandwidth memory systems that supply the capacity the wafer lacks. Commercially, the pitch is simple. Roughly double the tokens per second per wafer at approximately the same cost per rack means a customer selling tokens doubles revenue on the same hardware spend. First shipments begin this quarter. Third up, Anthropic published its August risk report, running to something like 186 pages, and the detailed public reading of it that circulated this week treats it as a substantial and largely voluntary disclosure. That framing is worth stating plainly. Most of the material is new. Most of it did not have to be published, and the net assessment from a fairly skeptical reader was moderately positive, on the assumption that nothing worse is being quietly withheld. Two internal models anchor the report. Agent Model 1 is described as broadly similar to their Mythos Preview and Mythos 5 systems, and is not expected to see wide deployment either externally or internally. Agent Model 2 is described as somewhat more capable than Mythos 5. A noticeable improvement for internal use, but explicitly not a capability jump of the degree observed between Claude Opus 4.6 and Mythos Preview. That comparison is doing a lot of work, because the Opus 4.6 to Mythos Preview jump spanned several release cycles. Model 2 is internal use only. On their automated research capability index, it sits only about 1.5 points ahead, which corresponds to roughly a month of progress. So the report's own numbers cut against the most dramatic reading of it. The report is organized around two autonomy threat models. The first covers misalignment in high-stakes settings, working through pre-internal deployment review, internal use monitoring, blocking interventions, a power-seeking environment evaluation, and a deliberately constructed reward hacking variant of a production model. The second covers risks from automated research and development, and asks directly how much their own researchers could be accelerated, whether they could be replaced, and what goes wrong if they were. The section that will get the most attention documents safety process failures, and I want to read you the list, because the list is the story. Refusing to pursue innovative misalignment techniques, exposing chain of thought reasoning to grading pressure to a substantial degree, directly training on misaligned behavior during a production training run. An instance of unmonitored, unrestricted agents holding access to sensitive resources, and repeated training on alignment, faking, transcript datasets. Every one of those is something a laboratory could reasonably have kept internal. And for our fourth and final story today, autonomy moved a step closer to the people who would actually use it. Anduril reported the second exercise between its YFQ-44A collaborative combat aircraft prototype and the Air Force's Experimental Operations Unit, conducted last month at Creech Air Force Base. The first exercise, back in April, established the basics. Air Force operators launched, recovered, and sustained the aircraft for the first time. This one raised the complexity of the tasking and expanded what Air Force personnel were responsible for. The change that matters is where control sat. operators tasked the aircraft across mission execution stages from multiple physical locations, which Anduril describes as disaggregated control. The stated purpose is to reduce the manpower needed per sortie and to make it feasible to generate these sorties from austere bases rather than from a small number of well-equipped installations. That distinction is worth more than the flight hours. A system that requires a large control cell sitting together in one room is a fundamentally different logistical object than one that can be tasked from wherever an operatee happens to be standing. And for the first time, operational users directly oversaw the daily mission autonomy flights, not test engineers supervising autonomy behavior, but the crews who would actually employ the aircraft, using mission autonomy to execute operationally relevant tactics and maneuvers. The exercise ran a week at high tempo, with multiple sorties on multiple days. The production variant carries the designation FQ-44, which is the small administrative signal that this is being treated as heading toward fielding rather than staying an experiment. What is absent is as telling as what is present. No autonomy performance figures. No description of which tactics were flown. No sortie generation rate. And no measure of how much operator workload actually fell. The claim being made is about the control architecture and about who was in the loop, not about demonstrated capability against a threat. And read next to the Special Operations Command notice published the very same day, asking industry for decentralized collaborative mission autonomy across heterogeneous unmanned systems, and insisting that government personnel be able to configure and sustain that software themselves. The direction is unmistakable. Autonomy is being pulled out of the vendor's vertical stack and handed to operational units. So what was this morning really about? Three of these four are organizations writing down, in public and in operational detail, the specific things they cannot yet control. A 20% compute tax on watching. A list of six ways a safety process failed. An aircraft where the interesting disclosure is who was holding the controls. And the fourth is the hardware making all of it run roughly 30 times faster, shipping this quarter, indifferent to the rest. The supervision is getting better, and it is getting more expensive, and the thing being supervised is not slowing down to wait for it. There are 96 items in the full digest today, including a scaling law study for image diffusion that puts compute optimality near 200 image tokens per parameter, about 10 times the ratio you would carry over from language modeling. That one nearly made this list. I will be back tomorrow. Until then, notice what the watching costs.